Hey, this is Stelly Efti.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
In today's episode of The Startup Chat, we're going to talk about self-serve versus non-self-serve in SaaS.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
So here's for those who might not know the definition. So just to make sure that we have no confusion in those, there are SaaS applications out there where the customer can sign up for a trial and then decide to upgrade, put in their payment information and buy the product all on their own, quote unquote, on their own, right? And we can challenge the self-serve model really is. But they do that basically without a salesperson needing to reach out and sell them and get their credit card information or push them to buy the product. So that's one model. And then the other model is where you have an actual sales process or a salesperson reach out, communicate, or have the trial user reach out to the salesperson, ask a bunch of questions. So you have some human interaction that leads to the upgrade and the paid account. So there's those two models of the world. There was a time, I feel like you might know this better as a SaaS historian and an active member in creating SaaS history. There was a time where SaaS was looked at as like golden era of software products that will be bought by people versus sold to people, and where sales teams will, where all we need to do is like build these tools for the masses and allow them to buy it on their own. And that model would be kind of a lot more scalable, a lot more economical than the old model of selling software that was heavily marketing and sales focused. Today, so then there was a time in B2B, it feels to me like, where a lot of B2B SaaS companies realized, well, we do want to go up market, we do want to sell to larger customers, so having salespeople and having heavy investments in marketing and sales is probably necessary and will make a big difference. So all of a sudden, sales became a bigger topic in SaaS. And now I find this discussion to be re-emerging, but with a different flavor and twist. Now, it's not called self-serve versus non-self-serve, but it's, will the future of sales be automated or be a chatbot or be AI or be, the intercom or drift, kind of chat windows that pop up at the right moment to communicate with your customers versus having an evil salesperson call or interact or reach out or send an email. So kind of automation, AI, bots, all these things are being kind of a new flavor on an old topic, which is, can we remove humans from the act of buying and selling software? And when you build your SaaS company, should you try to build it in a model that doesn't include humans that have to do any kind of selling to the buyers, right? This is my summarized history and the way that I frame the debate and the discussion, but I'd love to hear if there's any blind spots there or anything that you would add to that context.
Yeah, I see everybody debating this, a lot, and I'm just going to spin it around for you and just say, like, to me, like, people used to just use this self-service versus, let's call it full service, right, to be nice about it, or free, demo request. And they used to use it to get leads. And it was the best way to get leads because you didn't need people to, and this is for sales leads, you didn't need people to sign up for your product and use it. You just wanted the lead so you could sell them on it. And I still see some people doing this model, but there's a bunch of reasons to do the model and a bunch of reasons not to do the model. And so, for me, I don't know, like I always thought of it, at least in today's world, much more oriented around like who's your target customer and then using that angle. So I would actually ask your thoughts on that approach because, some customers just want to use it and try it and never talk to you while others really want to talk to you and learn more about the product.
Yeah, so I think traditionally we've divided the group. We've tended to say that the larger the customer, especially when we talk about enterprise customers, that these customers are used to be talking to somebody to make the buying decision, and that they will even look for a button that says sales, contact sales, which seems like an evil button for like another group. Let's talk, let's say you know, an engineer looking for a piece of software to buy online, if there's a button on a website that says contact sales, that doesn't seem like an appealing call to action for many engineering people out there. But for like an executive at a large enterprise company, that's actually an appealing call to action. That's actually what they're looking for on a pricing page oftentimes. So traditionally, I think we would just say, hey, the larger the customer, the more normal it is for them to want to talk to a salesperson to buy. It's the way they've learned to buy software and buy products. It's what they're most comfortable with. They don't necessarily want to sign up for a trial and play around with a product and discover everything about it themselves. They don't want to read all your copy on all your pages and go to a FAQ database and search for all the things they're curious about. They actually want to talk to somebody and have that person service them, quote unquote, with the answers and with the material and with everything they need to make a decision. So that was, I think, the traditional divide. And that's still true today. The larger customers will tend to want to buy products usually with more human touch, more human interaction. Obviously, it depends on everything depends on your customer. How do they like to buy software? How do they discover products? What are they used to? How are your competitors successfully selling products? All these things should matter and should play into the decision on how you want to do things. Your price point oftentimes will determine what you can or cannot afford to do, right, in terms of servicing people. And not just on the sales side, but also on the marketing side and also on the support side. Can you offer 24-hour phone support, right? How quick is your turnaround time in terms of your support that you give? If you charge people $1 a decade for your software, you're going to be fairly limited on what you can afford to offer in terms of human touch and human servicing. But so your customer base is a big part of it. I think the size of your customer oftentimes will play a big part of it. But I'll add something to this. And I think that's a component that a lot of times people overlook as they think about the future of people buying things. I do love automation and I do love technology as a productivity enabler and as a way to improve life and to remove friction and things like that. I honestly do. But I think humans, as long as humans make the buying decisions, like I think once we build software and that software is responsible for making buying decisions for our companies, once we're at that point, software will be the ideal delivery method to selling our software, right? Once a computer is buying, then a computer can sell and the computers can talk to each other and figure everything out logically. But as long as humans are involved in the decision-making process, there's going to be friction because humans struggle with decisions. Humans are emotional. Doesn't matter how much rational facts they want to acquire before they make a decision, there's always going to be emotions involved in how they make decisions. As long as you have humans involved in buying things, there will be some amount of humans required to be selling things to them. Because humans like to be talking to other humans. Humans like to be buying things from other humans. And I think that especially the tech community like us, we underestimate how valuable and powerful the human touch and a human interaction can be to people and overestimate how the efficiency of automating things and having AI and bots, how quickly that is going to replace the need for a human touch in servicing software or selling software to other people. So that's another thing that I would throw in there is the more difficult the buying decision is around your software product, the more necessary it's probably going to be for you to have humans that answer questions and help remove some of that friction and help in the decision-making process with the other humans.
Yeah, so because you went into it, I'm going to ask you, where is the value of this technology, these bots and the software, and how is it going to help with the human connection?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I honestly don't know. I'm sure that the biggest wins in the future will be ones that I'm not considering today. I think judging from the past, if you look at the phone as a massive productivity boost in terms of sales and marketing and allowing a human to interact with other humans non-restricted by their location. And then email is a massive productivity boost as a tool that allowed them to communicate non-synchronously and to communicate one-to-many. I think that technology will allow us to hopefully in the future allow the individual human to increase their productivity with tasks that today are fairly mechanical. I'll give you one example that's still a big productivity killer and something that I know there's a lot of solutions out there, but none of them are really that great yet, which is scheduling. Like scheduling the time for humans to come together and interact is still a massive law. Like a lot of salespeople, the amount of time they'll spend on going back and forth with prospects to find a time to talk, and then the prospects forgetting that time or being late or being a no-show and then having to or having something else come up, so they have to reschedule. The amount of scheduling time, the amount of productivity that gets killed that way, that hopefully is something that will go away, because there's no value in the two of us trying to figure out when the best time in our calendar is to talk. That's not where the value is created in the human interaction. So my hope is that that type of stuff will go away. A lot of the stupid type of stuff of like sending tens of thousands of emails and annoying a shit ton of people to get a few of them to respond, hopefully some of that high volume, low quality activity will go away. We'll have less activity and higher quality because there's going to be some kind of intelligence that filters what kind of activity should be done and how. Hopefully some of that stuff will go away and we'll find better ways to know with a little bit of a higher precision who to talk to and when to talk to them. That would be my hope, but who the fuck knows, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. I remember a few weeks ago, you made a side comment almost at the end of a conversation that we had that popped up in my mind just as we were talking now, which was that you said, if I'm right, if I remember it correctly, that today you observe that in many SaaS companies, sales is actually, in B2B SaaS companies, sales is actually a pretty dominant component to them succeeding or not, or having a chance for success or scale or not. You have a bunch of companies that you build companies that are completely self-serve, and some of them that had sales teams and were more full service, if you want to call it that way. You see a lot in terms of SaaS companies, new SaaS companies being built and SaaS companies scaling. How do you look at the market right now, and how do you think about even specifically sales teams and high human touch in SaaS today? Is it a necessary component for success? Is it crucial, or is it, you know, a downward trend? Like, how do you think about that?
I think it's really easy to get caught in like sales and salespeople making you revenue. So then you just start hiring a bunch of salespeople. And then at some point that catches up to you because the processes you use are not efficient, or your business or your market changes. And all of a sudden you have these 100 salespeople that are unable to close deals anymore for some reason, whether it's there's other products in the market, your product hasn't kept up, you hit some kind of bottleneck in your sales process because you hired too fast. So the most common thing is that companies raise a bunch of venture capital, throw that money at salespeople because salespeople are what's making revenue, and then they inevitably have to contract and lose a lot of those salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just doesn't work out. There's so many reasons why it doesn't work out. It's not just one specific one, but high level, they got caught up in the fact that they found a formula when they had 3 or 4, maybe 10 salespeople, and then they thought they could scale it to 100. And
yeah,
it didn't work.
Yep.
It's the most common thing. It really sucks, you know, because it sucks to have to hire all these people and then fire them. But I feel like a lot of folks are just not conscious of what they're actually doing when they create those systems and those processes. And then what happens is they fail, right? And they have to contract the company. Thankfully, a lot of them have raised so much money, it's okay, right? Because this is a problem you have when you raise money. Because basically, hiring salespeople and scaling sales is an endeavor of investing in your business ahead of your revenue, which usually only happens if you have the capital to do it.
Yeah, and especially 2016 was a year full of these stories. Like, there was not a single month where there was not like a unicorn type or heavily funded startup that had aggressively invested in sales that then decided maybe we need to cut down on that, right? Maybe we scaled too aggressively, too fast, or maybe for a variety of reasons we created a toxic culture, we over-incentivized the wrong type of behavior, whatever it was, but they created a ton of issues. And I feel like, when I came to the Valley, like especially here in 2007, hiring salespeople seemed so old school and so like stupid and like what, nobody wanted to do that anymore. And then I don't know when it happened, and probably I contributed to this problem, but you know, around over the last 5 years, because more people in the tech community and startup community were talking about success, building sales teams, doing sales, there was more knowledge spread and more companies started doing it. And because, you know, as you said, if you hire aggressively on salespeople, you'll see revenue numbers go up independently from if it's profitable or not, or if it's the right type of revenue, meaning they're closing good customers, qualified customers, customers that will succeed with your product versus just closing anybody and then having high churn problems down the line and all that. So it went from, in the past 10 years, it went from sales is horrible and sales is toxic and salespeople are the worst people in the world and we never want to have the need to have salespeople in our company to let's hire as many salespeople as humanly possible. Sales is the most important thing in the world. And neither of these things are true. Right. Even as a salesperson, I don't believe sales is the end all be all. I think it's really important, but I don't think it's like the thing that will solve all your problems. If the product is not right or if you don't know who your customer is, it's not going to solve your problems. It's going to amplify them. So I feel like we went through a phase in the past 10 years from one extreme to the other, especially in SaaS, especially in technology. And now it seems like in 2016 and now probably even heavier in 2017, I foresee a correction happening in this. And maybe I'm wrong about the timeline. Maybe it's not going to be this year. Maybe it's going to take the next 2-3 years. But I do definitely see, I think that there's a need for correction and for companies to not think about sales as good or bad or self-serve as the end-all be-all or the worst thing or the best thing. Just think about like what works in my market for my customer, for our team, and think about things in a measured approach. Like, you know, even when something is generating results, it doesn't mean that these results are the long-term results, are quality results, right? I can create a lot of shallow things. I can create massive spike in traffic to my B2B site, but if all that traffic is from 10-year-old kids, you know, that I got to click on some hacky subject line on Twitter, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I got a massive spike in traffic. It won't materialize itself. And the same thing is true if I got all these new customers that you know, upgraded to a paid account. If my sales team promised them things that we will never deliver, or if these people never had the money to pay for this, or we're not the right type of customers, it's going to create a massive problems down the line. So anyways, I think the two of us oftentimes get back to this theme of it depends on your customer and your company. And there's not a model that is going to be the model for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, this topic is fascinating just because we came from a place where, you know, going back to that kind of the big high level topic we've been talking about, like we came from a place where like everything was gated and you couldn't use something. And it was gated behind a contact request, a demo request, or just a lead form of some kind. And now we're in a world where most products, from a customer standpoint, even like really large enterprise products, to some extent, you can sign up for it and you can start using it before you even have to talk to somebody. And what I find fascinating about that is that what I'm seeing is you're seeing a sort of uptick because there's MQLs and SQLs. You know, one thing I think worth discussing before we're done with this is like the concept of PQLs. Are you familiar with that, Steli?
PQL, yeah. Product qualified leads? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's really? What they call it. Yeah, that's
it's
what they call it.
It's a real thing?
Dude. It's a freaking real thing,
man.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. That sucks.
So PQLs are super interesting. What they are is especially useful if you have a freemium business where you're basically using signal from the product to qualify the lead.
Hmm. Okay.
And the reason I wanted to mention it is like, I'm already not a fan of SQL, MQL, and all this complication people add into their funnels, because one of the reasons is SQL usually means it's sales-oriented, MQL means it's marketing-oriented, and then you have a divide. And so adding a third thing is really complex. But the reason a lot of companies have added it is because they are self-service, but they have a sales team, and their product provides a lot of signal. So like, you know, it's really important to know not only that people – you know, that somebody is a C-level executive at a company and it's a 50 to 100 person company, it's also equally important to know that they actually signed up, hooked up the product, started using it, created something in it, and have been using it actively every day for a week. And so that criteria turns into what a PQL ends up, you know, being comprised of, is a bunch of activity that a customer is doing in your product. And then that turns into some other kind of qualification for sales and to become a lead. And I'm mentioning it because it's not that popular yet, but literally all the freemium companies I talk to, all the SaaS companies I talk to that are freemium that have a sales team end up using some kind of metric like this.
And so what do you think about that?
I think it's smart. I mean, it's just like what a sales qualified lead would be for a criteria, or what a marketing qualified lead. Why doesn't product have it when there are products out there like Dropbox and Trello and many others where people are doing things and they haven't talked to anyone yet, and they're not necessarily a sales lead.
Okay, but this is not in a company. This is not a company that has an SQL, an MQL, and then a PQL as well.
I've seen all three.
Oh, so you've seen companies having these three qualifying criteria for leads?
Absolutely. I don't think that's ideal. I would actually say you should pick one. You know, and it depends what your company is driven by. I actually think MQLs are one of the worst, just because if you're going to align with marketing and sales in a company, I believe you should just pick one of them. And the ideal one would be the one closest to sales, which would be an SQL.
Yep. All right, cool. All right, I think we are close to tips time on self-serve.
Yeah.
So let's round this episode up on like giving a tip to people that are either wondering if their business, when they're starting, should I build my startup on a self-serve model, or should I build it with a sales model or high touch or full service model in mind? Or for the startups that already are in either of these models and have doubts if they're in the right model and thinking, could I switch from self-serve, or should I switch to hiring salespeople and being full service, or vice versa? I've had salespeople all the time. There's all these issues. There's these economic, maybe margin problems. Maybe we should shift to a full self-service model. Let's think about these two scenarios and tips for people on how to make decisions on how to choose the right model.
Yeah, I mean, I think we went into this a little bit early, but didn't really dig in. I really think what you said about it having everything to do with how your customer buys is pretty important. That's a good starting point. So if your customer is used to buying with a demo request and all that, sometimes it's hard to get them to buy any other way or sign up for something any other way. And then if your customer is used to self-service, it's very hard to get them to get excited about talking to somebody. So that's a really good, easy framework to start with. From there, though, you almost need to make a decision of whether you want to flip it and change the way it works in your market. I would say that usually I see folks who, in their market, it's a request demo or a contact request or something like that that's not really self-service, go more self-service because they want to get activity, like I was saying, and you know, get some data around people using it, or get actual people using it first, or make some part of their business easier, because you end up getting a higher volume of people using your product if they're able to use it right away. But you tend to get a lower volume of conversations. So it's a full-on trade-off, and I've seen it work both for enterprise and for SMB both ways. It just really, really depends on kind of what your product is, how it works. And honestly, one other piece I would add is just how much effort it takes for someone to use your product. If it takes a lot of effort, you might be better off not making it self-service.
Love it. All right, so my tip for those that are in either camp and are having doubts if the model they chosen was the right one, or are wondering how to test the other model, or if they should switch or not, I would just say, you know, stop worrying so much and just start testing, right? So you can always just take a certain subgroup of your leads or trials or whatever that come in and treat them differently than the others and see what the differences are in conversion rates. So if you have a full service and full service model and you're reaching out with salespeople, you could just make it that you for a certain period of time, you take half your leads and you don't full service them. You don't sales them. You don't have salespeople reach out to them, and you see how they convert and how they retain versus the ones that you do self-serve, full service. Or vice versa, if you do, if you do everything self-serve, then you start taking a certain subset of your leads that are coming in and you start reaching out to them and just run a test and see what is the difference. How difficult is it to do? What change does it require? I know of one really public, big SaaS company, you know, that's billions in valuation that very publicly says they have zero salespeople. But what they do apparently is they do have a sales team internally. They don't call it that. And they'll take certain products they have and they will deploy the sales team. They're very heavily self-serf. As a company with all their products, but they'll have this internal task force, sales force that will go and basically compete against the self-service side of the product to see if they can convert better. And if they do, they'll actually brand this as a bug in the software and they'll force the engineering team to make the self-service product convert better, right? So they'll have this sales team go from product to product team and try to compete with the product itself in converting better. And if the sales team succeeds with it, they'll try to ask the question, why is that? And how can we prevent that and change that? So, nothing stops you from testing these things and competing and taking a subset of your leads and experimenting with them and see what kind of changes and differences you can make. And then with more data, more information, it's going to be much easier to make that decision. Way too many founders are worrying and wondering for way too long without knowing how to make a decision on this. Versus just taking some action, creating some results, and then hopefully the results and the data will give you clear answers on what to do and if it makes sense for you to switch or not.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, that's a great way to test it.
All right. I think that's it from us for this episode. If you like the podcast, please do us a favor and go to iTunes and give us 5 stars and give us a review. If you have any topic you want us to talk about, just tweet at us, at Stelly and at HN Shaw, and we'll hear you very soon.
Bye.